Hi, listeners. This is Red. I wanted to give you a heads up that there was an issue with the recording software when Rabbi and I recorded this episode. As a result, the audio quality when I am speaking is not as good as usual. I know what happened. I know how to prevent this from happening in the future. I apologize. Much like the Burgundy Boys, HTHL is in preseason form. I look forward to being incrementally better for you in next week's episode. With that out of the way, here is the show.
Stats will lose to the human spirit.
We are fighting down the bottom group of players.
That's an extremely naive statement.
I didn't know any of that.
The arm sock tube's far too big for me.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. We are part of the Beautiful Game Network and brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Wednesday, January 26th, 2022. Cole Bassett is officially a member of De Club on De Moise. The Rapids are playing an actual game this coming Saturday, and most of Rapids Twitter will be able to watch it for free. And the PIDs still haven't signed a striker that Warwick Smith promised they are working on. I'm joined now by a man who has long but not long COVID, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Hey, Matt, it's good to see you. Yeah, what do we mean by that? I have had COVID for now 12 days and it won't go away. But it's not the fancy. That sounds awful. The long COVID where you have fuzzy memory and you can't smell and stuff like that. I got the triple vaccinated version of Omicron, which is basically like a cold that won't go away that starts with barfing. So I don't recommend it. But these are the times we live in where you could go out and you could eat outside only. You could wear masks and you still might get sick. So it's a bummer, but my kids got to see their grandparents and we got to go to Hawaii. And so that's kind of like the way you rationalize it. So I don't know how much you people want to hear about this. Maybe us talking about COVID for a year, like moving into year three, is not something that anybody wants to hear on this podcast. You'd like to jump right into the footy, which would be fine by me. Matt is wearing another resplendent ensemble. He's got his, is that an A Basin hat, Matt?
Yep, I got an A Basin hat, and then I got my Fulham winter sweater. I guess technically
I
Christmas sweater because it's got mistletoe and reindeer on it. The reason why I'm winning that, Mark, I don't know how much you pay attention to the English Championship, but Fulham are currently full speed ahead on HMS Piss the League.
Right.
And Fulham this season, Mark, coincidentally, in the four Saturdays that I've been at A Basin in which Fulham have played a match, FFC have 12 points, and I think it's a plus 11 goal difference, so four wins, no draws, no losses, and we'll see whether or not they can keep that up during the business end of the season. I don't know, Mark, maybe we need to, is this a parameter that we need to start tracking? Is Matt goes skiing at A Basin is lucky for his football clubs, and is this something to where I could much more easily get away with the Rapids if we're talking about a Saturday 7 p.m. kickoff, and then I could get back in time? Obviously, I probably aren't skiing all the way up until 4 p.m. in order to make it to DSG when I normally like to in the press box and everything, but certainly, you know, getting there for skiing and having okay-ish Wi-Fi in the A-frame and everything down at the base area for an 8 a.m. Fulham kickoff is not conducive to skiing and watching the game simultaneously.
I don't know. I think any year in which you climb a 14er is we're blessed. We're absolutely blessed. At least with having a good outcome at the end of the season. But you know, I don't have a whole lot of rituals that I go through. Since I was the basketball manager for George Washington University basketball, we had we only had one like lucky ritual, which was we had to wear a tie when we were managers, when we sat on the bench, and or worked the bench. And the first game that I ever worked as a freshman, I had a green tie, and so I matched it with green Chuck Taylor Converse. I had a bunch of that was one of those dorky things I did when I was 18, which was I had a whole bunch of fun colored Chuck Taylor Converses. So I wore the green shoes, and head coach Mike, and we won. And head coach Mike Jarvis comes up to me after the game, and he looks right at me. And there are 10 managers, like most of us he didn't know by name. But he walked right up to me, and he said, "What's your name?" I said, "Mark." He goes, "You're wearing the lucky shoes from now on." And so for the next 2 years, every game we had, I had a green Chuck Taylor Converse. So I don't know, man. Maybe I need some new shoes for this soccer season. I need some Chuck Tees.
Good point there, Mark. My black and white Sambas, and then my Ted Lasso mask that I had that I got midway through the season were undefeated when I wear them. Where the Rapids were undefeated when I wore them in the press box at DSG all the way up until Pittsgiving and everything. So I don't know, listeners, if you've got any match day specific regalia or things that you have or anything, or if you have recommendations on potentially lucky sporting footwear that Mark and I could invest in and everything that is probably not like the new LeBron shoes that are like $500-$600 or anything, we'll try them out and see what it does against LAFC on February 26th. But Mark, let's get into it. We've got a few topics we want to talk with. I guess we'll start with breaking-ish news. I don't know. It's 12 hours since the original tweet went out, and by the time you're listening to this, maybe it'll already be official, and then thus it'll be obsolete. But Mark, Fabian Rankel, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, who is a Quakes insider, an MLS insider for Area Sportsnet, is reporting that the Rapids have reached an agreement with Nicholas Mosqueda to bring him back in 2022. And there's a few other people out there who've posted it after that as well. I had kind of been hearing, Mark, that they'd been leaning towards that was more likely an outcome, where maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago that wasn't the case. And maybe Nicholas Mosqueda is realizing, you know, moving's expensive and takes a lot of effort. And then if I can just be an area where I'm happy with a manager who likes me and a bunch of other, South American guys who I get along with, you know, being a part of, Los Locos de los Rapids is maybe a good situation. Mark, your thoughts on the potentially imminent return of Nicholas Mosqueda and what this could mean for the club on and off the pitch?
It's not a big deal. He didn't have a ton of minutes last year. He's a useful cog. And I think one of the things that the Rapids are trying to figure out is which of its young players are going to earn more minutes this year. A lot of the young players last year, like Mayaka, Dantuma Yaya Toure, Darren Yapi, they didn't make their way into the first team. They didn't get a crack. Matt Hundley. And I think that has implied that there's a need to keep the depth, right? There's a need to keep Shinyashiki. There's a need to keep Jonathan Lewis. There's a need to keep Nicholas Mosqueda, guys who are not put them in ink starters every single week. So, but that doesn't mean that I think that Mosqueda is going to be more or less useful. I also don't think he's more or less essential than he was in previous years. And I also don't think that means anything regarding the team's efforts to go and lock down a designated player and or a striker, which I don't necessarily think they have to be the same thing. Matt, any kind of similar thoughts, or are you going to break differently from me?
I don't think it's not a super big deal. You know, the Rapids, whether or not they get back to the playoffs and whether or not they win a playoff game when they get there, probably was not contingent on Nicholas Mosqueda returning or going back or anything. You know, Mosqueda isn't going to walk in. There's no team in Major League Soccer that is a Nicholas Mosqueda team away from winning MLS Cup. He's a good guy in the locker room, one who does not complain despite the lack of minutes that he's gotten. He seems to be well-liked. He seems to like everybody for the most part. He's a good locker room, a good culture guy, and that's somebody that you need in. You know, Mark, I think you, in a rendition of Backpass last year, I think referred to him as maybe the Danny Rojas of the Colorado Rapids, you know, bringing his football as life energy, you know, and that's valuable. And if, you know, that, you know, positive energy, good vibes and good hustle allows him to provide 800 useful minutes to Robin Frazier, then I'm here for it. And similarly, if he's kind of in the, you know, aging veteran group of the Stephen Bateshear, Drew Moore and everything, where they're there for culture, helping the guys out on the field and then occasionally pitching in off the bench and everything, I'm all for it. And I would assume based on where he's at in his career and the value that he brings to the team that, you know, that it's going to be a good financial. It's not a bad financial position for the Colorado Rapids, both in the compensation that Mesquita's getting that's not limiting them in other areas financially, and also a contract where, you know, if things go really well, there might be a team option for the Rapids to extend, or, you know, they're, you know, Porrick Smith isn't going to be in one of our press conferences, Mark, you know, kind of dancing around the fact, you know, in a year or 2 years, thinking like, God, can we just wait for Nicholas Mesquita's guaranteed contract to end so that we can get him off the books? Because thank God we need this guy out here. That's not the situation at all. And I'm looking forward to it. And he's a good guy to talk to in the media, even though I would say his English has gotten better since coming to the Colorado Rapids. But, you know, he certainly, his personality comes out despite a little bit of a language barrier. So he's someone who I enjoy talking to. Mark, I assume you had a good conversation when you wrote about him in Backpass. So all thumbs up for me, albeit not significant thumbs up. Speaking of significant thumbs that are sideways at the moment, Mark, there's been all this rumbling going back to Porrick Smith's media availability a couple weeks ago now about the club bringing in a striker, the need to bring in a strike for where they are in terms of goal contributions that they got from the center forward position. And in that phone call, I believe it was Tom Bogert from MLSsoccer.com, you know, who asked about, you know, do they actually have the financial might in order to spend on that? Presumably, Mark, there still might be some money left over from the Sam Vines transfer that is available for that. They've obviously, the Rapids have done a good job so far of accumulating GAM. Obviously, they've got a lot of that from the transfer with Kellen Acosta. And, you know, Mark, I wake up every single day and, you know, I check Twitter to see what the buzz is about who's doing things. I check MLSsoccer.com. My FOTMob app occasionally goes on with news and everything, you know, and you're finding FC Dallas signs a striker, you know, for $7 million. Orlando is spending money. Columbus is spending money. You know, there's the number of MLS teams that, you know, have not brought in a new player internationally that is generally attacking for more than $1 million, but oftentimes more than $1.5 or $2 million, is increasingly growing by the day. And so every single day that we get closer to the start of the season or the end of various transfer windows brings in questions and pressure that may come about whether or not the Rapids are going to have that player, when that player is going to arrive, whether it's going to be in time for the beginning of the season or later on or potentially in the summer and everything, which kind of brings up the question. I don't know if it's an elephant in the room, Mark, because, you know, this is something that we talk about regularly on the podcast and everything, that, you know, the Rapids can get funding because of the good moves that they make and then selling players either within the league or abroad to get transfer fee money and then add that to the war chest and everything. But the simple fact is the number of MLS teams that a GM or a sporting director can't go to their owner and say, hey, you know, we need $2 to $3 million for a transfer fee and we need to pay a guy $2.5 million, you know, we need X number of $1 million for a transfer fee. We need to pay this guy more than $1 million a year for a 3 to a 5 year contract or anything. And then he's a striker or a number 10 or a winger who's going to make a big impact. The number of GMs and sporting directors who are not in that position in MLS is increasingly very small. We have seen Houston Dynamo start to roll out the cash under their new ownership, Mark. And so it begs the question whether or not the Rapids will be able to do that. And given that there are other teams like FC Cincinnati and Toronto FC throwing out money willy-nilly, you know, if you've got $5 million for a transfer fee, the odds of you whiffing and what that whiff would look like is significantly less bad than, you know, spending, you know, reportedly $1 million and then 1.5 in salary on a Skelton Gashi, and then what whiffing on that means for your club both financially and then for that player as well. Mark, should we be worried time-wise about the striker? Should we be worried given how other ownership groups and other MLS teams are throwing around money? Or should we simply trust that Porrick Smith is cooking, something is in the works, even though the rumor mill is dead on this front, and it's going to be okay because just because the Rapids can't spend $15 million on the best player on a team in Serie A doesn't mean that for the amount of money they have, they can't get the right guy for the right culture for them to be successful, even if they're not bringing in Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Carlos Vela.
Well, you know, the only worry is the date, which is that the number of players who are available when the main European transfer window closes, which is in 5 days from today, declines. But that's regarding transfers in, not transfers out. So European teams can still shed players. It's just that if you don't have any ability to add players, it's unlikely you would do that. So the challenge then becomes, like, what players other than European players are available to be brought in, and what is the likelihood of that taking place if it doesn't happen the next couple of days? And the answer is it's somewhat likely. You know, if you're looking at players who kind of don't fit in anywhere, you know, early February to mid-February is still possible. Pork Smith may also be happy with what he's got on hand. He may just be satisfied to try and roll out Rubio and Shinyashiki up top and make that work, at least in the short run. The Rapids have often started the season without making big moves and then kind of waited for that summer window to do things. I don't love that as an idea, but I think it's possible. The pressure is on, though. I mean, recently Philadelphia transferred Kasper Schipilko across the league to Chicago Fire. Great video, by the way. If you're a connoisseur of MLS social media and video teams doing clever things, that's a really good one. Go Google Kasper Schipilko and Chicago Fire on Twitter. The biggest challenge there, of course, is you have to figure out how to spell Schipilko. It's not spelled the way it sounds because it's Polish. The other one that's interesting, also Polish, interestingly enough, Charlotte FC just signed their first designated player, whose name is Karol Swiderski. Pretty sure I pronounced that right. It's spelled the way it sounds, I think. Another Polish player who comes from PAOK in Greece, one of the top 3-4 teams in Greece every single year. I think what that also tells us, Matt, is the kind of leagues right now where MLS is buying from. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was Sweden, Denmark, and Norway were the places where a lot of MLS players were coming from because they were a bargain. You know, in the last couple of years, you've seen more players come from Poland and Russia. There's always been a pipeline of players who've kind of been African players who were stashed in some lower league team and kind of never broke through, or were kind of like put right on a plane from being scouted in Africa because they, you know, for whatever reason didn't make it. So those are a couple things that we can look for. And then I think the last thing, we're still early in the phase where a lot of the big European teams that are at the bottom of the table are at that point of fish or cut bait, right? Like, this would be a good time if you were a championship team that was going down to say, we have some expensive players, it's time to get rid of them. But it's probably unlikely that anybody's giving up right now. So that's, I think, always a challenge for the Rapids. Last piece of data, which I say probably every time, so I apologize to our longtime listeners if I sound like a broken record. Matt, maybe I'm running out of interesting things to say, and I just, you know, remind us of the same thing. Since Porik Smith's first year as general manager, and when he was an assistant general manager for the team, he has been reticent to pay large transfer fees for players. A number of significant Rapids players came on transfer fees, and speaking off the record with club officials, the general sense was there were a lot of mistakes made under the Claudio Bravo administration. Claudio Lopez Paul Bravo era, in which they paid for players, and a lot of those players, the transfer fees they paid really didn't seem kind of necessary. They didn't really pan out. So Yeah, so that's a thing. If you can get a player on a free, I think Pouric will get it. That being said, I think, you know, I think $1 million transfer fee is a doable number. It's just a low number on the international scene. I mean, there are not a lot of players who go at the million and below mark. You know, you're looking at already, you know, English League Two, French League Two, Spanish League Two or Three. You know, it's not, you're not gonna sell a player that cheap in the top leagues in Europe or even, you know, Belgium or Holland.
Yeah, no, but you know, I look at it, Mark. You know, I think it was Facundo Torres, winger for Orlando, coming in for reportedly an excess of $7 million. You look at just a couple years ago, the DC United's biggest transfer fee that they ever had was $5 million for Edison Flores. And so I think fans can get wrapped up in, you know, everybody else is spending, why aren't we spending? And then this is an easy, albeit a fair narrative to say Kroenke doesn't care or Kroenke's a cheapskate. I think the more a nuanced take of the fine print below that as well is that a lot of that spending has been poor. And again, it's about the, you know, can the Rapids find the striker that they need for the transfer fee and the salary that works for them, and whether he's a TAM or a DP player will work out financially. And, you know, that's a, you know, I know better than to whether or not make a big stick about that designation when talking with Pouric Smith or Fran Taylor or anybody else. And so, you know, I think that's something to look at. There is a player out there, is a player somewhere in world football who costs less than $1.5 million on a transfer fee, who would be open to coming to the Colorado Rapids, who would sign a 3 to 5 year contract, get paid somewhere between $1 and $1.5 million, who will bang in 10 to 15 ish goals this season for the Colorado Rapids and be in a better position than players in the past two playoff games were, hosting Portland last year, 2 years ago now at Minnesota, to in those big moments finish where other players have not, that then put the Rapids in a position to be successful in the playoffs, in bigger regular season games against bigger teams with more money and everything. The Rapids have been really smart about that, but the simple fact is, if the Rapids don't have that, or if they whiff on that relative to other teams that are able to spend $3 to $5 million on a transfer fee, have all three DP spots in addition to having a complement of TAM players, is going to make it difficult. And one of the things, Mark, that kind of in the back of my head about this that I've kind of been thinking about, there's a part of me that's concerned that the Rapids peaked or achieved the max of what they could with the roster that they have and how they're built as a club last year. And there's a bunch of other teams that aren't going to stay pat in that. Austin FC is going to spend big. The Cascadia teams are going to spend big. The LA teams are going to spend big. And so if that's the Rapids' high watermark and finishing first in a year when Seattle potentially bungled it, in which Sporting Kansas City bungled it to an extent, kind of, you know, it's like there's nowhere to go up from the regular season standpoint, and going down would be seen as a disappointment. I think just the reality is that this is still a hardworking team that has to be able to outwork rather than out talent certain teams. And just simple that they have, and the structure and the coach they have, and just the calm Robin Fraser is in control of the situation and knows what to do, will make them a lot better than a bunch of other teams that have more money but are way less functional, are way more dysfunctional. But I worry that that ceiling is still there. And so far in the TAM era, in the MLS 3.0 era, the reality is that, you know, a team that doesn't have a guy who they spend a certain amount on a transfer fee and a certain number of DPs and guys making, you know, more than $1.5 million historically don't do well in the playoffs and historically haven't won MLS Cup. And so that's something that's in the back of my head, that in this modern, matured experiment that is the Rapids way, we don't have enough data on, but I'm still kind of concerned about. And look, you know, next week the Rapids could officially sign their striker and everything, and he could score 13 goals this season. And I'd be fine with that. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that.
Matt, I was just going through, because I'm bored, to try and think of, like, what's a good comp for a player that the Rapids might want. And I was just going through all the strikers of a certain kind of ability. Which the easiest way to do that, by the way, is to do it using FIFA, because it has all the players listed. The ratings, you know, they're often very wrong based on where things are now. But they give you a good benchmark of what kind of players the Rapids are available for. I just wanted to say two things. Did you know Jermaine Defoe was still playing? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Isn't he in, like, the lower divisions in England somewhere?
Yeah, he is. Did you know who else is still playing? Former DC United legend Long Tan is still playing. He plays for Changchun Yatai in the Chinese First Division. I had no idea Long Tan was still playing.
All right. Good for you, Long Tan. Mark, let's move on to actual concrete news that we have. And this past Friday, it was made official. Cole Bassett passed his physical and everything. We kind of knew that this was already happening, but officially, Mark, it is a 18-month loan. I've heard on good authority, folks, that there is a loan fee attached with it, and then obviously there's an option to buy at the end of the 18 months. Some question about why it's an 18-month schedule. Remember that MLS and obviously the European leagues are a little bit off, so if they were to just do a six-month loan, then basically Bassett's coming in for basically just the second half of the season. If it was a 12-month loan, basically he's coming in the middle of the season, leaving in the middle of the next European season. This way they have him for the back half of the 2021-2022 campaign, and then obviously for the entirety of the Eredivisie 2022-23 season. I have heard, Mark, though I haven't been able to confirm numbers on this, that this would be if Feyenoord execute the option to buy at the end of the loan, that this would be the largest collective fee that you would have for a Rapids player outgoing in club history. So between the loan fee, which is already paid for or is going to be incrementally amortized, folks, and then the transfer fee that's been agreed upon for after that, that would exceed the $2 million reportedly that Sam Vines went for. There's also some rumblings that there might be a sell-on fee, Mark. I'm going to guess it's probably not 50-50, but I haven't been able to look at it. In any case, Mark, it's official. The way that it's looking like from the officials and the way both clubs have handled it and Cole's looking at it as well, I think it's far more likely than not that Cole Bassett has played his final match as a member of the Colorado Rapids. Mark, your thoughts on ultimately this move, this opportunity for young kid Cole, and then more importantly, I guess let's look back at, you know, what he gave to the Colorado Rapids, you know, as a youth player and then as to a young and exciting first team talent.
I want to do my best Sarah McLachlan. I will remember you if you will remember me, right? Like have that moment where we look back in the past. I feel like I probably told this story at some point, but you never know. Me and Matt were like an old married couple. I start to tell a story and Matt goes, "You've told that story on the podcast 5 times, Mark." So anyways, I remember the first time I noticed Cole Bassett, because it was noted to me. And Matt, you tell me if you were there for this. I don't remember if you were there or John Babiak was there with me, or if it was all three of us. The Rapids were hosting a training session, like a regular, like open to the media training session. And it was inside DSGP. And we were behind the hoardings on the, I guess it would be the east side. And they were having training. And as they typically do, they have about 5 academy players in there. And, you know, they were all having a good time. And I always like to talk to the academy players because the academy players are more excited to talk to reporters than anybody else. And I just love somebody being excited to talk to me because, you know, I'm nobody. I'm not really anybody. Whereas Stefan Aigner does not really need to talk to me. And, this was in the Anthony Hudson era. So trigger warning, the words Anthony Hudson just came out of my mouth and will be used again. And we were watching players and one kind of player was running over towards us during a drill or whatever. And Anthony Hudson was over with Chris Sharpie, assistant, coach and goalkeeper coach. And Anthony doesn't normally talk to reporters during training. I don't remember him ever doing it in the middle. He came over to the hoarding and he stood next to me and John and he pointed at a guy and he said, "Look at that kid. He's going somewhere. He's pretty special." And that's, I'm pretty sure, exactly what he said. And then he walked away. And that was Cole Bassett. And I remember at the end of training, I walked over to the academy guys and I asked them to introduce himself and I wrote them all down in a notebook. And, I met Cole Bassett and one of the other players, said when I met Cole, he said, "Keep your eye on him. Like he's the guy." And Cole gave this look down at his shoes, like this very aw shucksy kind of look. 'Cause he was, I think, 16 at the time. But the dude was hot, you know what, back in the day, and people thought he was going somewhere. He was picked out. say what you will about Anthony Hudson as a head coach for the Colorado Rapids. I think the reason that he is an assistant coach for the U.S. men's national team, I think the reason, one of the few things that you can say about Anthony Hudson to his credit is that he was a good identifier of talent, right? He didn't necessarily sign a lot of the players that the Rapids signed. He did pick out a couple of really good ones. I mean, Declan Wynn, had he had a little bit better luck, could have really turned into something. Tommy Smith worked out to be a really, really good ball-distributing center back for the Rapids, who I don't think they would have ever picked up without him. And Cole Bassett, who was a youth player, who he picked out and said, this guy's the guy, you know, keep your eye on him. And that's when I met Cole. I also was at his, the first time he was, his signing day, and I met his parents, and he was really an absolutely great guy. Couldn't be happier for the guy. Wish him lots of luck. I can't wait to run into him in 5 years at a major event or something like that, say hi and have him go, do I know you?
Yeah, no, I think the thing that stands out for me, Mark, is kind of just the evolution and how he's being treated by the club, and really either asking him about how things are going, what's going on in training, how is he interacting with other people, and then also how they've been interacting with him. You know, he signs in the middle of that, I want to say it was the 2017, it might have been the 2018 season. You know, he was kind of similar to Vines. He was just this, you know, wide-eyed kid, like can't believe it and everything, just total deer in the headlights and everything, fearless on the field in terms of like can't grasp like the gravity of the situation to actually make a mistake, but then also like getting a lot of pats on the back from people out of the academy, getting a lot of nice treatment from the fans and everything, and probably rightfully at some points during training, like needed, you know, a studs up tackle, you know, to put him in his place and everything. And so just talking about how, you know, he interacted, like everybody giving a pat on the back, and then the coaching staff in his second year being harder on him, Tim Howard, Kai Kamara, Jack Price, the veterans in the group, you know, really teaching him and sometimes doing it from a tough love perspective. And to the point where, you know, Cole was kind of, you know, I remember it was after one of the games, I think he scored, I want to say this is the 2019 season, and he said, you know, I didn't find out I was starting, you know, until yesterday afternoon. I had to work really hard in training this week in order to earn this opportunity. I remember now, I think it was under Connor Casey, and, you know, I deserved that. And, you know, I kind of, maybe there were times where I was kind of given that, or there was, you know, assumptions, or, you know, I was being given the benefit of the doubt when really what I needed to was to earn it, or specifically not being given the benefit of the doubt and everything. And so just to see how he went from being this, you know, young academy kid joining the first team to really blossoming into a mature, consistent, quality, hardworking young man and a young professional as well. And now to see him have an opportunity to do that even further, you know, is good for that. And I guess, you know, now, Mark, any listeners, you know, who were not super aware of the Belgian First Division or super aware of the Eredivisie, both of those are amply available on ESPN Plus, where hopefully the Rapids will be available with no geo-locking in 2023. But that's another topic for another time. And now they've got a club now they can look forward to, and Cole's going to, you know, a good environment. And, you know, like I said, you know, one of my friends who's, Mark, I don't know if we've talked about, I was one of the only Americans in my grad program at WashU. And I remember talking to one of the other grad students who was Dutch and everything. He was an Ajax guy from Amsterdam and everything. And he always used to joke that the Eredivisie is like the de facto, is like the outsourced U23 team for the other four or five big leagues in Europe and everything. And so Cole's going to get an opportunity to play. He's going to get an opportunity to compete. He's on a team that is going to strive to win trophies domestically, is going to strive to be in competitions, you know, in European competitions as well. And there's a scout from every single team in the Premier League, every single team in the Bundesliga, Serie A, etc., that at least once a month will be sitting down to exclusively watch a Fire Nord game. And if Cole Bassett does good things, like we've seen him be spectacular and versatile and multifaceted in the midfield for the Colorado Rapids, eventually that talent is going to stand out. And so he's in a really good situation, Mark, where he could spend the next 12 years of his career at Fire Nord and be fantastic there as, you know, the American and everything, just like how Josh Sargent was getting the USA chant from Norwich supporters the other day. Or at the very least, it's he's on a platform to where he's going to be viewed by so many clubs, and there's opportunities for that. To say nothing, Mark, of the fact now that he's at a big club where if he's starting regularly and doing good things for a club that's challenging Ajax for the title, possibly, you know, getting in the knockout stages of Europa League or even in the group stages of Champions League, he could start to work his way into the conversation for the national team next World Cup cycle. Anything else that we want to say about young Cole, Mark, or shall we move on?
Godspeed, kid. It's hard to watch the Belgian League. A lot of the games are hard to find. It's a little easier to find the Eredivisie. But, you know, like, I think both of these teams are going to be in either Champions League or Europa League next year. So that's kind of a fun thing that we might see. They may even play each other. The Cole versus Sam... Derby. I mean, I think didn't they post a photo, I think, on Instagram last week together, and I looked it up and I was like, they play in separate countries. Oh wait, the two separate countries' teams are 1 hour apart from each other, which is real close. It's like Niagara Falls to Toronto, guys.
Yeah, and then Mark, you topped that off with the fact that Feyenoord put out a full 15-minute like behind the scenes video of him interacting with everybody, and it seems like there's a number of English language speakers as well, so that's kind of a softer landing spot and everything. And there's enough similarities, at least in terms of pronunciations, between Dutch and English to where I think that'll be a soft landing spot relative to, I don't know, Mark, if he was sent to Russia, for example. Yeah. If he's going to CSA Moscow as someone with an American passport trying to learn Russian, that could be a little more difficult for someone in that situation. And Mark, guess what other former Colorado Rapid is currently residing in Rotterdam because they play for Sparta Rotterdam?
Oh, Yunus Nobley, right?
Yes, as well. So, you know, at some point, is there going to be an Instagram story of the three of them getting coffee when they all have, like, coinciding off days? Would be interesting. And
I don't think their manager is going to let them get coffee in Amsterdam, if you know what a coffee shop in Amsterdam is good for.
I should say coffee in Feyenoord, rather.
Yeah, that would be better. I think the coffee shops in Rotterdam are pretty much the same as the coffee shops in Amsterdam. I could be wrong about that, though.
Yes. So in any case, for those who are wondering, Mark, Sparta Rotterdam currently in the relegation playoff spot, 16th out of 18th, 14 points on 20 games played in the Eredivisie. So Yunus Nobley potentially fighting out of relegation. Feyenoord on 20 games played have 42 points. They are in third in the Eredivisie behind Ernie Stewart's PSV and then the aforementioned Ajax, both of those teams on 46 and 48 points respectively. So third place in the Eredivisie gets you a European Conference League qualifier. We'll see whether or not Feyenoord can push up into the Europa League or the Champions League spot and whether they can challenge PSV and Ajax for the title and whether or not Cole can be a part of that. Let's move on, Mark. We're going to return to that long email of multiple Ask HTHLs that we got from Rob Bayless back on January the 17th. And Mark, these ones are coming with a bit of a Brazilian flair. I will throw the first question to you. So we mentioned a while back that Andre Shinyashiki could have been on the trading block, or that if the Rapids were packaging something, that Shinyashiki would have been a guy who would have had good value within the league. He plays a couple of different positions. He could score for a team that, you know, doesn't really have the striker position locked down with a big DP and anything. Hardworking guy, et cetera, et cetera. Many things that make Andre Shinyashiki a wonderful player for the Rapids would make him potentially a valuable piece for other teams. How much value do you give to the fact that he grew up in Brazil and then went to DU, so knows the language, referring to Portuguese, in the area so that he can help the guys like Estevez and Max? Mark, how much we've talked about how the growing South American contingency makes for a softer landing spot, makes for something to where maybe Mesquita sees the value in that culturally, working with guys that he likes. How much of having Andre Shinyashiki made it easier for the Rapids to pursue Brazilian players, or at least made it to where now, like we have Los Locos de the Rapids, maybe we have the Brazilians of the Rapids?
Yeah, there are playing with new statistical toys that I can use. There are 27 players of Brazilian nationality in Major League Soccer right now. So it's pretty much, you know, statistically speaking, more likely that a team would have one than that a team would have two. I always think it helps to have a guy on your team who speaks the language, a guy who kind of naturally sits in. Matt, you mentioned earlier my interview with Nicholas Mesquita. And I asked Mesquita, I remember in the interview, about some of the other players. And he kind of mentioned that there were a number of players who, Spanish-speaking players, who he helped to settle in, where he was very helpful in making sure that they felt comfortable in the country. And that's really valuable. You know, it's really important to have those guys on the ball club that can make you feel, you know, comfortable and settled. I think even without it being a language thing, there's definitely the culture thing that sometimes comes with it. I remember also when we interviewed, going way back, Lalas Abubakar, about his experience of being a Western African player who played for Columbus Crew. He talked about, you know, food and having kind of those Ghanaian roots and being able to talk with his fellow players like Jonathan Mensah about jollof rice. And, you know, that's really important. You know, it's really hard to be far from home. These guys are all pretty young. They generally, if they're anything like I was in my mid-20s, are not very good at cooking. They're going to need to know where to get the local good food. So that's really important. So I think that it can't be underestimated the impact that Andre Shinyashiki can have in helping Max Alves settle into this team.
One thing that I'll add there, Rob, that is actually, I don't know, this isn't super breaking news and everything, but so Mark, the Colorado Rapids are actually hiring a Portuguese translator for this season as well upon Max's arrival. So we've seen, I know you haven't been at training in years, Mark, but, you know, there would be something to
sing.
You know, there'd be something to come up in training, and then something would need to get communicated from the coaching staff to Lucas. And so basically Andre Shinyashiki would have to come over and do a bit of translation. And I know Diego Rubio often was really open about translating and doing that kind of communication with Michael Barrios. That kind of makes sense as well, because, you know, they both play relatively up top. They play similar positions. Maybe there's some word in English that Mikey isn't fully understanding, and then Rubio can help translate such that, you know, the gist of it is getting across as well. Andre Shinyashiki will have much less homework in terms of translating that. So doing that both for Lucas Estevez and then for Max as well. I do not know. I should have checked with the club official I heard this from whether or not that translator will also be fluent in Spanish, but I don't know. Mark, correct me if you think otherwise. I don't know that English to Spanish is a big issue in terms of communication there, but you obviously have, you know, Lucas Estevez, who didn't speak much English, Max, who I would assume also has to do some work, probably taking some English classes as well. And so the only real viable option you have is obviously Andre Shinyashiki, who's fluent, bilingual, you know, doesn't have an accent, or at least I haven't at all noticed a Portuguese accent when I ask him questions exclusively in English. So that's another thing in which maybe the club is realizing that pipeline that they have, and then also creating for a soft landing spot. You know, we've got a bunch of good guys who are Spanish speaking, who are South American and everything. That's going to make it easier if we have five of those guys to add a sixth guy. And so now having three Brazilians on the team would now make it easier for the fourth Brazilian to come in, on top of having a translator that would, you know, resolve most of the concerns they might have about communication or not speaking the language or getting settled in that regard.
I asked last year about players to interview, and one of the players I asked about interviewing was Michael Barrios, and the reply from the club was, Barrios' English isn't very good, and that's going to be a tough interview. And my Spanish is terrible, so you know, I'm not criticizing at all. I think the thing that was interesting about that was, we know that Michael Barrios has been in MLS for a number of years. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, his first year in the league was like 2016, so he's been, you know, on this side of the Rio Grande for a while. And, you know, I get it. You know, I've lived in Israel for 2 years, and my Hebrew is still somewhat mediocre. But that being said, it's really up to everybody to decide whether they really need it. I think the other thing that's cool about Major League Soccer for a Spanish speaking player, and it really speaks to the global nature of the game, but also the importance of Latin players in the league. I think it's great that Michael Barrios can be in Major League Soccer for 5-6 years and never need to learn English. That the expectation is that he can do all the business that the club needs with Spanish. Last thing I'll say, and this is basically semi-useless, but it's a tiny data point that I can give you. When I was in high school, Matt, if you finished Spanish 4, you were allowed to take a semester of Portuguese because some of the base words of Portuguese overlap with Spanish. But that being said, I'm sure you've probably heard Portuguese spoken. I have enough. And I find it really, really difficult to understand. And I speak, or at least understand, passable Spanish and English. So I think it would be a pretty heavy lift for a translator who does both. I would expect that there aren't a whole lot of guys. I mean, if anybody on the club was going to be trilingual in Spanish, Portuguese, and English, it would be Shin Ishiki, who has played enough soccer on this side, in this side of the country, in this side of the world, that he has spent a lot of time in locker rooms with Spanish-speaking players.
One quick fact check for you, Mark. You were close. You said 2016. 2015 was Michael Barrios' first year with FC Dallas. But no, that you bring up a really good point, Mark. And obviously, FC Dallas, you know, you talk about the Spanish-Mexican influence on the greater Dallas area. And, you know, at that time, when he was coming into FC Dallas, that would have been the height of Oscar Pareja Profe's time there, where you probably had, in terms of, like, primary first language they had growing up, you probably had FC Dallas' first team probably had more Spanish speakers than they had English speakers as well.
And I think, by the way, that's a huge draw. And I think that's been one of those things that's really valuable when you have a Spanish-speaking head coach. I think some things that I've seen around the league that have been really impressive are, you know, native English-speaking American-born coaches who've spent a lot of time working on their Spanish to make sure that they can kind of fit into the locker room. I know that Bob Bradley's Spanish is pretty good. I think Robin Fraser speaks pretty solid Spanish, if I'm not mistaken. It always impresses me when a coach goes out of their way to do that. You know, I think if I were making close to $500,000 or $1 million a year and working with an international cast of players, I would go out and learn, you know, a third or a fourth language. As it stands, you know, I wouldn't be a particularly useful MLS coach. My Spanish is just bad enough that I could mistranslate lots of things. And there aren't enough top quality Israeli players that I would particularly be useful in using my Hebrew.
You know, and the other thing that I'll say about the language front and everything, you know, Mark, Sergio Aguero spent how many years at Manchester City and everything, and then his English was never really that good, but he knew enough to where, like, he could hear English and understand it, just necessarily wouldn't speak it or wasn't necessarily fluent. So just because Michael Barrios doesn't speak English well at his own, you know, individual level doesn't mean that he can't understand it and then internalize the messages that you have. You see pretty regularly all over the year, Mark. I think there was an interview that Weston McKennie did. It might have been this season, it might have been last season. He was with Juventus and everything. And then so he was getting interviewed by Italian media afterwards. And initially they were asking him and they wanted to do it all in Italian. And basically they would ask him the questions in Italian and then he could respond in English. And this was in this might have been within his first year. So he knew enough Italian to understand the gist of the question, but then didn't quite feel comfortable answering in Italian. And obviously now he's at the point where he can do interviews in Italian. So some players kind of want to pursue that, like Diego Valeri, who was taking 2 hours of English lessons when he initially came and everything. I don't know that we should penalize or, you know, feel frustrated or feel like, you know, Michael Barrios choosing to not learn English is that big of a deal and everything. The key thing is that they're able to communicate within the team, and whether there's a translator or, you know, you can go back and forth between two languages as a bilingual reporter and everything. I'm totally okay with that. So a translator is going to make it easier for me in print to speak to Lucas Estevez, to speak to Max as well. I'm all for it. And if that makes it way easier and Andre doesn't have to, you know, run down to the back line and everything when Robin's yelling at Lucas in order to translate something and he can stay in the midfield or forward position, that makes life easier for Andre, easier for Lucas, easier for the club. Second Ask HTHL we have that's related to that, maybe we've kind of already answered it, Mark, but so the other one that Rob had on the Brazilian front is, with the signing of Max, it seems like we're having a Brazilian talent pipeline starting to form. Thoughts? Rob, I'm hoping to get a couple interviews on key people at the club where I'm going to be asking about that, but I would say yes. The club was late relative to other MLS teams in realizing that South America was the future of where we were going to mine talent and then get guys who could come from those leagues, come to MLS, be stable, be happy, and then also develop and potentially move on to Europe or just get bought by Flamengo because now they have American oil money. But that's another topic for another time. And so it took a while for them to develop that. And I think now they've shown that whether it's with the analytics department, the scouting department, how they've gone through what they're looking for stylistically, physically in a player, they've done a really good job identifying particular players that work for them at the, and then being able to acquire them at what makes sense for the club financially. So I wouldn't say that there's quite a Brazilian pipeline so much as just in general a South American pipeline they have, because we'd have to obviously include Brian Galvan, who's Argentinian as well. And then while they didn't come directly from South America to the Colorado Rapids, you know, Nicolas Mosquita, Michael Barrios, etc. So they were late in identifying that. It maybe took a while for them to set that up, given that there's nobody in the club that immediately would have had connections there. Where, you know, I would say, Mark, if Marcelo Bielsa, flames out with Leeds, for example, and then in a year takes the Atlanta United job, he can immediately point to, okay, here's all the guys that I know in the Argentine first division who I would want and everything. It takes a while to develop relationships, to get an understanding of the league, the level of quality, the financial implications for what those clubs are dealing with, and then, you know, build out a database of understanding to then be able to identify players that work for you that would be good comps and everything. And so it's taken a while for that, but I would say, Rob, there's absolutely a pipeline to South America with a focus on Brazil and Argentina. And that's why I'm so high on Max as an acquisition, because if they're willing to spend $1 million in order to acquire him, given what we've already seen from the early returns from a Brian Galvan, from a Lucas Estevez, and given how we talked about earlier, culturally, language-wise, they're making it for a soft landing for Max to come in to this midfield, that pipeline's developing and it's only going to get bigger. And so hopefully that means it's going from a 64-inch pipe to a 128-inch pipe. Mark, any thoughts on that trend that we've seen from the Rapids, or shall we move on?
Yeah, one small quibble, which is that I think you meant this, but you didn't exactly say it this way. I'll just say it slightly differently than you did, which is I don't think it's the club's first foray into South America. I think it's just their first successful foray into South America. I was trying to remember what year it was that they tried for a bunch of South American players. It was 2015. The 2015 Colorado Rapids had three Argentinian players on the roster. Juan Ramirez, Luis Solignac, and Lucas Pitinari. Solignac and Ramirez, they paid, this is going back to an earlier conversation we had, Matt, they paid transfer fees for, and neither one panned out. And the scuttlebutt from inside the club was that was what soured a lot of the front office on paying South American clubs for their talent. I mean, Juan Ramirez never developed. I mean, he was great. The thing that I always used to say was he was fantastic at running with the ball straight ahead and then falling down in the final third. That was like his absolute great talent as a Colorado Rapid. I think he scored one goal in his career. They loaned him out the year after, and then they got rid of him altogether the year after that. Lucas Pitinari, I always really liked. He was a defensive midfielder who kind of played as the ball-distributing guy alongside Sam Cronin in 2015 for a lot of that year when they were trying to figure out, like, you know, they were using a double pivot 4-2-3-1. I like Pitinari. I don't know exactly why they decided to get rid of him at the end of 2015. I think he made a lot of mistakes. I think he wasn't perfect, but I thought that he was a work in progress. But the point is, they tried with Argentina before. They didn't have a lot of success, and ultimately they kind of went cold turkey on South America for years, like you said, Matt. And then they tried again recently. I think the other thing that I want to say about the 2015 year, and if you're Googling out there, fans, and not currently driving through a snowstorm in Colorado, as you listen to this podcast, which based on the weather lately, thank God we've got some snowpack coming. It's really good news. But because we had that really dry, you know, terrible period. In addition to that fire, which I don't know that we really have talked about much on the podcast, but you know, shout out to the folks in the Longmont Boulder area who witnessed or experienced that and were displaced. Our love and prayer to all of them. But like, the thing is that 2015 team is actually filled with players. This is where the lucky shoes come in, Matt. It's filled with players who had a really good year and then fell off a freaking cliff, like, all of a sudden, right? A huge number of players who were really good, and then all of a sudden went to being really not good. One of the fullbacks that year was Michael Harrington, who had a really good year in, I think, 2014, and then in 2015 was hot garbage on a stick. Dylan Powers, who was rookie of the year for the Colorado Rapids in his first year, and then in 2015 when they tried to install him in midfield as the number eight, fell off a cliff, like total disaster. Gabriel Torres, who they brought in as a designated player, and absolutely fell off a cliff. Marcelo Sarvis, who is Brazilian, who they brought in from the Galaxy and was essential to the Galaxy being a fantastic team for a number of years in the early 20-somethings, fell off a cliff, right? Charles Alondu, Luis Solignac, Lucas Pitinari, Jared Watts, he is. A lot of guys. Actually, Watts had two more good years. So did Axel Schoberg. And then fell off a cliff. And the last guy on this list that I'm just going to mention is Sean St. Ledger. Sean St. Ledger, who was a solid defender for Orlando, then got into a little bit of personal trouble, shall we say, was rescued from Orlando, hopefully to go the straight and narrow in Colorado. And all signs and portents demonstrate that St. Ledger, Sledge, as they like to call him, did not get back on the wagon in Colorado and was a hot mess for the Rapids and basically had a minor injury, was banished from the club, and never played again. My point is, I'm a little nervous about not adding too many new players this year because I feel like guys sometimes fall off a cliff. Do you have a next man up in that case? I don't know what the question was. I'm just rambling at this point.
Mark, a quick fact check for you. You are correct. Juan Ramirez, in his 27 games for the Colorado Rapids, scored one goal. Was in a 10-minute substitute appearance on July 11th, 2015. Mark, who was that opponent that he scored against?
July
11th? 2015.
2015. Well, you said it with a giant catfish, cat bird, cat dog grin, which leads me to believe it's one of two possibilities. A, it's some really bad U.S. Open Cup opponent like the Atlanta Silverbacks. B, it's Chivas USA.
It's Real Salt Lake. Ah! He scored in a 3-1 win. So Juan Ramirez, RSL killer, scored his one goal for the Rapids in
kinda
a 3-1
victory. Kind of
like
Bobby Wood with us. I think he had like three goals last year, and he had like two of them against the Rapids or something like that. Something obscene, offensive, and ridiculous. Speaking of which, we no longer have to worry. We always complain bitterly about Rusnak and Krylock being Rapids killers. Well, we ain't got to worry about Rusnak anymore, do we, Matt?
Well, we do, Mark, because now he's with the Seattle Sounders.
True.
So
we don't have to worry about him with RSL. Anyways.
Okay, so I look forward to the Colorado Rapids defeating the Fighting Chicharitos in the first round and then getting destroyed by the Sounders after a bogus red card at the Clink later this year. Last thing that I'll say on that front, Mark. Mark, I don't know if we've talked about this. Like, do we feel, is there an industry standard of, like, statute of limitations on off the record? In like 3 years, maybe, folks, when I'm confirmed that there's nobody who I spoke to about this still working for the Colorado Rapids or maybe an MLS, Mark, I think you and I could hash out like the full behind the scenes details on Sean St. Ledger and the weirdness of that. Once we confirm that like there's no way for like him to get back at us or that like we're not going to burn any bridges that weren't there in the first place. That is,
I more or less alluded to it. I don't think anybody but that being said, the standard that has been laid down, Matt, and you and I both heard this podcast, was when Alan Gordon went on the Benny and Sal show and basically revealed all sorts of stuff that I think you and I knew but wouldn't necessarily have said, and then revealed a bunch of stuff that we didn't know. I think the one big piece that we didn't know was that, and this is not me spreading gossip because it's already been out there, but like that Benny Fellhaber had an injury, and then because he was injured anyways, he went out and he got a vasectomy so that he could take a little bit of additional injury time while he was with the Colorado Rapids because it was just a convenient time for his vasectomy, which that blew my mind that a dude would walk away from the club to get a vasectomy so that he could have a little bit more recovery time. I think that bar of like one season away is pretty, like, we're going to keep way, you know, more safe than that. We're definitely going to set a statute of limitations at, like, what do you think, two seasons, three as a minimum?
I'd say three and the people directly involved in the incident are no longer at the club.
Nice. I mean, you know, I have less dirt than you're going to have these days at this point. You know, my best dirt is likely going to happen when I get really, really drunk with one of the USL front office guys. And literally all of eight people care about USL front office dirt. So,
okay. So I think what I'm hearing, Mark, is the next time I'm at a game and Alan Gordon is working media for Altitude, I need to bug him about bringing back from the dead the BSI podcast and then having Sean St. Ledger and then them talking about it. And then from that point on, that next HTHL that we record, it is like no holds bar. We're naming names. We're giving dates and everything on all of the details on that.
No, the one thing that we've never done a very good job of as reporters or podcasters is one of the things you'll notice when you do a documentary, although we've been working on this little documentary on the 2010 championship, but one of the things that you learn is retired players will dish. I mean, they got nothing to hold back. They'll tell you like it is. So, you know, that's one of the things we probably need to do more of as Colorado Rapids podcasters, which is tap the retired dudes a little bit more.
Last thing that we have, Mark, the MLS preseason is obviously in full swing, and the Colorado Rapids, Mark, will actually have a game this coming Saturday, January 29th, in the Desert Showcase. They will be taking on Sporting Kansas City, and I don't know if you know, Mark, this little birdie or this little website called ColoradoRapids.com is reporting that this game and then the other Desert Showcase will actually be viewable for fans to actually watch a stream of it at this website link called coloradorapids.com/live. Unfortunately, you can only stream it if you're in the local broadcast territory. So, Mark, you might have to do some...
It's the Unblock My Altitude reverse-a-roo, which is like, you know, you can't get Altitude in Colorado, but you can get these preseason games. It's bizarre.
Yeah, so this game coming up January 29th against Sporting Kansas City, folks, and then their February 5th Desert Showcase match against the Houston Dynamo. In between opposite those games, they'll be playing Seattle Sounders in a closed-door friendly on February 1st, and then in Orlando on February 11th, they'll be taking on Orlando City before heading down south to play Comunicaciones in Champions League. I don't think that those games will probably be streamed, Mark. Those have been games that the club, like, in a reduced capacity, either does, like, a live feed update on their website and then maybe also some Twitter updates as well. And maybe we get a handful of highlights. But if nothing else, we'll get a starting 11. We'll get timing of substitutions, a score line, and then who scored goals probably. But chances are, folks, February 1st and February 11th, you won't be getting a stream for that. But so, Mark, let's look ahead to it. How are you looking forward to dusting off your VPN password so you can actually watch this game against Kansas City? And what, if anything, are we looking for in the preseason that does not matter until it does?
I mean, I think in the first game and the second game, you're mostly looking for whether any of the Super Draft players will be there. You're looking for any of the Academy players, if they're going to be there. The Rapids don't have currently signed a third goalkeeper, so you're looking to see if Abe Rodriguez is going to be there or if he's going to start, because that's the logical thing. I mean, if I were the Rapids, William Yarborough wouldn't be anywhere near the field for any of those first games. There's just no point. You know he's going to be your number one. A reminder, the Rapids picked three players in the Super Draft. Midfielder, center back, Muhammad Omar from Notre Dame, Anthony Markinich, defender from Northern Illinois, and trying to figure out who's the other one. There's one more guy. Sorry, it's on a separate page. Roberto Molino from Las Vegas Lights. So are any of those guys going to get into the game? Are they going to play much? Those are a couple of things that you're really looking for. Maybe you're hoping to see 15 minutes of Max Alves to see what he looks like. Maybe you're looking to see what formation they line up in to see if the Rapids are going to tweak things from a 5-3-2 or a 3-4-3, or whether they're going to go back to a four-man backline, which I think is unlikely. Those are some things you're looking for, but you're not really looking for a win. You're not really looking to see how many minutes the starters get. You're just trying to pick up a little bit of details. Anything you're looking for, Matt, that I didn't mention?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking for, I would assume these scrimmages will probably have different rules that allow for, like, you know, a first team and then a second team lineup. But this is, you know, ostensibly an actual competitive game with the Dead or Diamond Classic. I believe it's the competition, the preseason tournament that has the Armadillo Trophy. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, maybe.
Used to. I don't know if they're doing that anymore. Maybe it may have had a new name, but well, I hope so.
In any case, I'm looking for, you know, does this look like a first team lineup? And is there a player who we didn't immediately assume was going to be a first team player? And then do they work their way in? You know, if Ali Larraz is starting in the middle of a midfield alongside Max and alongside Jack Price, that's going to be eye-opening. That's going to be something where I'm going to ask somebody at the club about how Ali worked that way in. What's he doing in preseason? Are there injuries? What's going on? Or is Ali Larraz plausibly competing with Brian Acosta for that third central midfield spot? Is something that I would be looking forward to. Well, I guess it wouldn't be Brian Acosta because he's away with Honduras with the national team. But in any case, that's what I'm looking for. So I'm looking at the individual level and then like the macro level. Is there something in the formation, in the tactics that we're seeing that's different? You know, do they destroy Kansas City 6-0? Do we see a lot from preseason results? Not really, but that's an indication that something's going well. So I'm zooming out to see the big picture on the whole of the team and then zooming in on individuals. But am I focusing too much on like the center back level or like what's going on in the midfield tactically? No, guys are still working on their fitness. They're still trying to figure things out. This could be an experiment that works for one and then we don't see it for another 2 months or anything. So that's what I'm looking for. Rabbi, we've been going on for about an hour, which is a lot given that there was no actual game to talk about, no actual news this during this week. Anything else or shall we get out of here?
Our sponsors are Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC. Icarus FC, makers of fine custom kits. You can get with whatever collar or no collar, V-neck, round neck, colors, custom designs, or you can have them make them or you can make them yourself. And Roughneck Scarves, they use their your colors. You can make the simple silk ones. You could make the thick, heavy ones, mostly acrylic, some wool, all kinds of different options that you have there if you want to make something for a Bachelor's Day. Bachelor's Day? Is Bachelor's Day a thing? I know Pistachio Day is coming up on February 26th, but I don't know about Bachelor's Day. But if you wanted to make scarves for Pistachio Day, Matt, you could do that at our friend Roughneck Scarves. Matt, tell them how to hit us on the socials, on the emails, and with our fine written work.
Yeah, so you can follow Rabbi and I individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. It's at Rapids96podcast for the pod on Twitter as well. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL or email us like Rob did at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Check out our further written work. Mark's got Batcast in the works. Mark, I'm officially reprising the Rapids of Color for February for Woo! Black History Month and everything. That'll obviously be starting next week. Very excited about that. You can find that at holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can view us in web form. You have an option to sign up to our newsletter. Get an email. Don't miss an article. It'll go to your inbox of choice. That's also where you can become a subscribing Highliner as well. And then, Mark, we did have a question. If you were renewed for a year-long subscription for 2021, that auto-renews for 2022. So to our past Highliners from last year, you don't have to change anything or do something else if you want to keep giving us money. And we thank you for giving us money. If we bring further monetary value to your life, you can also head on over to patreon.com/Rapids96podcast if you just want to give us a one-time cash donation. And then also head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL for a very good deal, sponsorship deal that we have with the Denver Post for all of their digital sports content. Listeners, we will see you next week where we have an actual Rapids game to actually talk about.
Peace.